Sun Kim Sing, real one. Yes, Mr. Sun, would you like to tell us about your background?
I was born in Burma on June 24th, 1924. I came to Singapore in the year 1933. I went to Limercier School at Waterloo Street and later moved to a new building at 218 Queen Street. I started from primary class. I was a little bit overage. I managed to complete a senior Cambridge exam that was held in 1941. I was told that that was the last Cambridge exam. The examination center was at the Raffles Institution, Bras Basah Road. I remember that early morning, December the 8th, 1941. The Japanese came to bomb Singapore. I was at that time living at number 2 Tanglin Road as well as number 3 Nassim Road, the official residence of the late Mr. Obenhaw. I had the privilege and pleasure of living with that family at that time, and he was responsible for my education because he paid for it, and I lived with the family throughout the war.
Just to interrupt you, what was the relationship between you and the Oz family?
My eldest brother had accompanied Obenhaw in the early 20s when he founded Tiger Balm Ayantong in Singapore. And a few years later, my second brother came along and worked for the same firm. And after some years, my second brother went back to Burma and brought me along. That was in 1933. The purpose of my parents' idea was to send us away one by one so that we may further our future prospect. So I landed in Singapore and lived with Obenhaw's family.
Since 1933?
No. I was living at New Road Tiger Balm office for a short while until my eldest brother found a foster guardianship because he had to go away on assignment trips all over Southeast Asia and China in connection with his work. So he found someone to look after me and live with the Lim families. I have lived at Bras Basah Road. I have lived near Middle Road with Lim family. And eventually, after some years, I went back and to our head office at Neil Road. Then, by coincidence, Dato' Lee Chee Shan's father was visiting at that time, and he recommended that I should go and stay at Obenhaw's residence because all the other sons of Obenhaw had gone to Lenan University to study, so there was no boys in the house. So that was how it started. The examination was completed a week or so later, and the schools were closed for December holidays, and it was announced that the schools would reopen only after circumstances permit in view of the situation at that time. I was having problem because I need to have a job. The pocket money that I was drawing during the school days was only 15 cents. Money in those days were really big. So I approached the general manager at that time, Mr. Lee Chee Shan, if he could give me something to do. So gladly he gave me a post as an office boy, and I believe the salary was $25. To me, that was a big sum. As days gone by, the war situation in Singapore get worse. There were more Japanese planes coming to bomb, and the bombing frequency becomes more severe. Many people had left Singapore, evacuated to other foreign countries, and Mr. Lee Chi Shan was also planning to go away to follow his family, who had earlier sailed for Rangoon. So a few of the office staff remained behind to look after the company, and I continue to live at number 3 Nassim Road. Mrs. Obunhorn, number 3, and her young son also remained behind. She did not wish to go to Rangoon.
Which Mrs. O?
He had 4 wives. So during the war, 2 were in Singapore. The first and the second went away to Burma, evacuated to Burma in a group. So I remained at number 3 Nassim Road. I believe it was on the 13th of February, the Chinese New Year Eve, that the war became more intense. The Japanese had already entered Johor, and they were shelling probably from Kranji or even nearer Bukit Timah area. So that afternoon on the 13th, 3 shells exploded inside the compound of Nassim Road. The first one exploded near the little house in an artificial cave where I and 3 other person were having a chit-chat. And the youngest son, Oji Ho, was standing on a step higher above the others. In fact, before the explosion, few minutes before the explosion, I and the other person walked away. And that was the time the shell had landed. So I was knocked out unconscious. How long I remained on the floor, I have no idea. When I came to, I went back and looked at the scene where the explosion had taken place. Oji Hall was killed instantly, and the other man, who was an ex-ground technician with the Royal Air Force at Seletar, he was groaning in pain and asking for doctor, doctor, doctor. So I drove him to General Hospital in a car. The shelling continued. Explosion could be heard from different directions. I arrived at the General Hospital, where the scene was a chaotic one. More and more vehicles and trucks were coming in, bringing wounded casualties. I got down from the car, went in to fetch hospital attendant so that they could come and help me to remove my patient. After they have removed him, I left immediately without even providing the story. And that was the last time I see of my friend. On my way out, I stopped at the gate of the hospital, not knowing which direction to take in order to get back to Tanling, because the burning, shelling, and people running in different direction caused me unable to decide what I should do next. Eventually, I took the same route back along Outram Road, Tiong Bahru, Grange Road, and finally I arrived at number 3 Nelson Road about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. When I arrived at number 3 Nelson Road, I was so surprised to see my younger brother, who had walked all the way from New Road to Tanglin under difficult situation, and he has arrived safely. It was quite an amazement to me. With his help, we went to the spot where Oji Ho, the young boy, was lying dead. With a piece of blanket, we wrapped him up and took him to the second spot where the shell had exploded. There was a little excavation ready made for us to perform our simple burial, and he was buried. We took some palm trees out of a pot and planted on it so as to mark the exact spot where he was buried.
How old was he?
He was at that time about 9 or 10 the most. After the war, when his father returned from Hong Kong, he was given a proper burial.
And his mother?
His mother all the time was living in occupied Singapore, together with me. And there was another young nephew who kept her company. One day, some Japanese troops came to inspect number 3 Nassim Road. And in the course of inspection, a dog came out from our air raid shelter, and the Japanese soldier, seeing the entrance of the shelter, went to make an inspection. And there he found boxes and boxes of jade, which we have kept under the house. That's the place where we used to take air raid. Whenever there is an air raid, we took shelter under the house. We have another 2 air raid shelters constructed, one behind the kitchen, another one behind Oji Ho's mother's little house.
So, who kept the jades, and what sort of jades were there?
They were the collection of the old man of Boon Hall. He brought them from Hong Kong and China. As you know, that in 1933 or earlier, the Japanese had already invaded China, and many people from all parts of China, some of them evacuated and came to stay in Hong Kong, so probably they were forced to sell their personal belongings and collections. So Oben Ho managed to collect quite a substantial quantity of jade. So before Mr. Lee Chi Shan went away, he arranged to have them taken out of the showcases, put them in wooden boxes, and carry them and put under the house for safety. Coming back to the Japanese soldiers coming to inspect the jade house, he must have gone back to report to his superior what he had found in the jade house. And one day I was invited by that senior officer. His name was Wanatabi. His car had multicolored flags. That means he is a high-ranking officer. He was stationed at that time on a hill at Nassim Road belonging to J. David, a prominent racehorse owner, a very wealthy man. So there was an interview. The important point that he would like to know from me was, where did the All family kept all their valuables and jewelry? He spoke in Mandarin. I could speak a little bit of it at that time, so the conversation was in Mandarin. He couldn't speak English. He could speak French and Russian. So I replied to him and said, had I knew where they have kept the valuables, I believe it was my duty not to tell anyone. And he laughed and he said, tweet. What I said was right. He inquired where the owner was. That means he was referring to Obenhorn. We say that he went to Hong Kong, and from there we have no news whatsoever, so we have no idea where he was at that time. So the conversation was quite cordial. There was no threat, no sign of any intimidation, and I was sent back in his car.
You said his car has multi-colored flags.
Multi-colored flags. That signifies the rank of an officer who is in the vehicle. Red, blue, yellow, these are some of the colors that were used to indicate the rank of a military officer. So this chap must be quite a big shot.
You mean his car has all sorts of colors?
When he is using his car, then the little flats would be put up.
So what color was the flat?
As I said, it's red, blue, yellow, a combination of colors. So that was what I remembered.
But I thought the Japanese soldiers went to look at those boxes. He should have known that those were jades.
No, the boxes were not open at all. You see, to complete the events of the day, I might as well continue and tell you that a few days after the interview, there was a general security screening of all the citizens in Singapore. Whether it took 1 or 2 days or 3 days, I do not know, but it was done all over Singapore. And that was the time many people were taken away. So our designated place was Stephen Road, the junction of Balmoral Park and Stephen Road. It is at present occupied by Pine Tree Club. It was a residence of Europeans. There were two similar bungalow houses, and we were kept there for one night. All the men folks were told to go there, accompanied by two soldiers, and we spent one night in the tennis court, locked up. It was there that I met the two Chua brothers of the second carriage. They were also there. So the next morning, the process of interrogation began, and when my turn came, it was already almost noon. I was asked what my occupation was, and so I told them that I had just finished schooling. The schools had just closed. And whether I knew of any soldiers or people who were in the British Defence Force or in the police, I told them that I do not know anyone. I have no connection whatsoever with anybody. So, because of my age and the fact that I was a student, they released me. So I returned. Actually, the interview took place with Wanathabi after I was released from the security screening. In the course of conversation, Wanathabi said, "I had instructed the people there to protect you. Whether this is true or false, I have no idea, but I consider myself a lucky one to have returned."
While you were at that concentration center, what language did they use to question people?
There was interpreter, and I spoke in English. I cannot remember whether it was a local person or a Japanese lady. It seems to me it was a Japanese lady who must have lived in Singapore. So she gave me the impression that she was quite familiar with Singapore.
And how many people, the Japanese soldiers, were there to guard the place?
Perhaps there might be a dozens. I knew this because they came in a lorry load. There was a change of shift, and I saw soldiers coming down each time, about a dozen of them. There was another bungalow next to us, so we were actually in two compounds, two different groups. They came to feed us in the night time with some soldiers' biscuits belonging to the British soldiers. It was hard, dry thing. We begin to appreciate and like it. After that, we even look for that biscuits, even after the war. So, at least they keep us alive for the night.
And how many people were there altogether at the concentration center?
It was sardine packed. We had hardly any space for us to lie down at night. Your head would be on somebody's body, and somebody's feet, foot would be on your head, across your body. And so it was packed like sardine.
And have you seen anybody being called to a site and waiting to go somewhere else?
It was not visible to me because we were in a tennis court and the interrogation took place inside the bungalow. And those people who they suspect would be taken away and kept aside and taken away in a lorry, we are unable to ascertain how many were being taken away and how many were released.
But did you see any lorries along the road?
There were vehicles parked even inside the compound of the house. So those were meant for those people who are to be taken away.
You mentioned there were two bungalow houses. And do you mean that each one has their own way of interrogation?
In other words, there must be two groups of people interrogating the people. Probably they wanted to finish the interrogation that very morning, that very day. I suppose there must be more than 200-300 people involved, and at that time they have so many sections where they used to interrogate people. It involves the whole population of Singapore. There were no women or ladies or girls in the group, in our group. It was only men. And probably those who were over 60 at that time were also not involved. They were after the younger men.
Could you walk over to the other bungalow?
No, we are not allowed to get out of the tennis court. Except when we wish to answer nature's call, then we have to get permission and a soldier will accompany you to the toilet.
And after your release, were you given any stamped or...?
There was a small piece of cloth with a chop on it. In other words, that would signify that you have been cleared of security check and you were told to keep and wear it.
So after this incident, you went back to Nassim Road?
Yes, and it was the next day that the Wanatabi called me up for an interview. And he also told me that we all should move out of that house because since the owner is not in Singapore, we are not entitled to live there. I was not in a position to tell him that Mrs. Obenhall was staying there for fear that they might take her away on account of Obenhall's activities and his relationship with the nationalist government. He was helping a great deal towards the China war effort at that time.
So did you all move out?
He provided us with a number of cars and a lorry so that we could take whatever belongings with us. So we moved down to Neil Road and we stayed there for a time being until we find a suitable accommodation.
So how many were there altogether?
There were two groups of people. The group I'm with is Mrs. Obenhall, nephew, and a teacher who had arrived from Hong Kong a year earlier and staying with the family, teaching the young boy Oji Hall. So that is one unit of the family, if you might call it. Then there was another group of people, relative to wife number two, and they came from Katong, and they also went back to their respective houses in Katong, and I have not heard or seen them since. We found a flat at Tiong Bahru, Eng Hong Street, and there we lived for some time. And eventually, after some 1 or 2 months, we moved to a nearer place to our office, Neil Road. There, another flat was available. It was during that time, living near the Neil Road office, that the Japanese started investigation how we managed our company not being treated.